Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
He kōna I purangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
Hi, I'm depressed alcoholic comedian James Nokise. A couple of years ago, I had a mental health breakdown which resulted in panic attacks on international flights, stepping in front of an oncoming bus, and eventually showering so long that I began to get a little bit hungry. And that's when I discovered something magnificent. Through the magic of takeaways and running water, it turns out my mental health safe space is eating fried chicken in the shower. And that's how we've ended up here, a mental health podcast on headspace and happiness. This is a special episode co-produced with Pacific Media Network on Pacific men's mental health in New Zealand. I'm chatting to three of Tat North's finest, New FM breakfast host Henry Hohenberger, musician Church of Church and AP, and creator of Brotown and driver of Bentley's, Oscar Kindly. We're talking generational trauma.
It's terrible when you're a little kid and you're prone to some adult's prejudices. Oh. And that has some impact.
Generational wisdom.
Every morning I wake up and I tell myself I'm the sexiest person that ever lived. Yeah. And that's how I get my day started.
And generational television.
There's like a specific genre of white comedy, like John Cusack, It was just so chill. Like every time I look at that, I'm like, bruh, pre-9/11 was crazy.
Some of this will get a bit real, the language, the subjects. So make sure that you're in a safe space with your comfort food. And join us, eating fried chicken in the shower. Hi, and welcome to Eating Fried Chicken in the Shower, a mental health podcast with me, James Nokise. And today, I am joined by three men who have only really just met each other. We're having a special conversation about Pacific men's mental health. We've got Henry from
All Fresh Breakfast, New FM.
All Fresh Breakfast. Oh, yep. Man, you did that like a pro. All Fresh Breakfast, New FM.
Get paid for it.
We got Church from Church and AP.
Yes.
And we've got Oscar from Ancient Times Past.
The olden days.
Playwright, presenter, screenwriter.
Legend,
actually. Well, yeah, Pacific Arts legend. And we're all, I've just realized, rocking a different decade because Church, you're 20, mm-hmm. Is that right? Yep. And Henry, you're 30.
30, yep.
I am uncomfortably close to 40. And Oscar,
I've tipped the edge.
You've tipped the edge just 51. Over 50. So I want to start by saying thank you for joining me today. Why we're eating chicken in the shower is a couple of years ago, I had a mental breakdown. Which led to a suicide attempt, the second one, so it was familiar ground. And I ended up in my recovery at my mate's place eating KFC. Mm. And I said, I'm going to go take a shower, but I'm still a bit hungry. He was like, take the popcorn chicken. And so I found myself eating popcorn chicken in a shower. And he was like, how are you feeling? I was like, this feels real good. And it just became my whole thing for my stay at his place was eating fried chicken in the shower.
And it helped.
And it helped. And so it became like my mental health safe space. So that's why the show's got its name and that's what it's called. And it's also a proof that even a mental health breakdown can lead to an economically viable situation.
All parties, man.
And now while I was growing up as an Afakasi Samoan in New Zealand, I think one of the big questions I had when I thought about the Pacific community, and Oscar, maybe we've talked about this way in the past, was a feeling of the two questions for me as a teenager were, do I belong? Mm. And am I worthy? And I'm wondering, since we all have different age groups, for you guys, when you were teenagers, what's the question that maybe came to you when you thought of the Pacific community?
I am half Samoan, half Māori. Mm-hmm. So as a teenager, I never really understood how to fit in. So I think subconsciously I ended up just saying I'm a New Zealander. Yeah. Because, you know, being Afrikaansi, you're never Samoan enough for the Samoans, but you're never Māori enough for the Māoris.
Yeah.
So I think subconsciously I just ran around and said I was a New Zealander to avoid the conversation completely.
Yeah.
So I don't know how, as a teenager, I was able to fit in. I just think in general I don't fit in anywhere.
Yeah.
Just because I don't think I'm a typical Pacific male.
What do you mean by that, Hamlet?
I think there's a staunchness I feel like a lot of Pacific males are supposed to have, whereas I am very animated when I talk. I talk too much, I talk too loud, I talk too fast.
Yeah.
And I feel like it was too much for me to fit in with, I guess, the stereotypes, if you want to call it that, of what a Pacific male should be.
Mm-hmm. I understand you, like, talking about those archetypes, like, you know, everybody's Samoan uncle is the same, you know, like, there's a definite type. And I think growing up, I think what I used to ask myself was like, what qualifies my culture? Is it the color of my skin? Because, you know, that should make me Samoan. But I remember when I was about 8, my family moved to Samoa and we stayed there for some time. And I was like, I don't think it's like, it's not the color of my skin because everyone thinks I'm Balangi.
Right.
Like when I got there, the way I became mates with everyone is I just used to say like swear words in Samoan because that's the only thing I knew. I couldn't speak the language.
It must have been funny going from being one thing and then...
Because growing up, you're like the Samoan guy. You know, and everyone's like, oh, you're like, And you have Samoan mates that are like all growing up. And then when you move over, it's like, nah, bro. And you're like this Kiwi guy.
Yeah,
and I think that's a very jarring situation to be in, and I think it's more commonplace in New Zealand because, you know, a lot of us feel displaced in some way, you know, like I know most people that met me, especially in high school, would always be like, oh, you speak so well.
It's kind of like funny and heartbreaking because you were just in high school a couple of years ago, and I remember like hearing that. Like,
still always people are like, oh man, like your English is really cool. Like, man, like you're such a good speaker, but like I know what you're really saying.
People still say that.
Still.
Wow.
Still.
They used to say that, and I mean, back in my. In ye olden days, there was so much racism around. You were just dealing with that. You almost didn't have the time to have emo problems like other teenagers. Because you were just dealing with watching your parents getting treated a certain way, watching your family being treated a certain way, watching people behave differently around you because you were a certain way. So a lot of those questions we didn't resolve until we had alcohol and that later in life. A lot of those questions, they tend to be ones that you can confront more as an adult. As a teenager, I just remember in the era that I was a schoolboy, there was so much racism. It was like the water that a fish swims in.
Because Oscar, you're a teenager.
In the 80s.
So like...
Great music.
Officially post-Dawn Raids. Unofficially, you know, the police powers of stop and
but
search.
But they were still assholes.
Yeah.
They didn't... It wasn't just the Dawn Raids. You know, it was police pulling over just to search your bag. You know, it was...
That happened to you?
Yeah.
Bro, that happened to me. In the 90s.
It's teachers talking to you different. It's the guidance counsellor telling you different aspirations. When you go and seek advice as a young person ready to take on the world, and then suddenly you have a chat and then you're reminded, oh, that's right. People have certain expectations of people that look like me or whatever.
Can you speak to what that does to you, that negative reinforcement?
Oh, yeah, it's all part of the conditioning, you know, that society and culture demands of us. And it affects us all differently, and we all cope with it differently. Some react with humour, some react with alcohol, some react with violence, some react with music. you know, it's all different ways of kind of working that stuff out.
Yeah.
But if I was to add something, I would say, like, growing up, I was never fazed if a white person, like, you know, was racist towards me or anything. But I think it would hurt me most if it was one of us, you know?
Mm. Right.
A lot of us have been conditioned over the years. I don't know what, you know, histories, you know, the elders have gone through, but I definitely know growing up there were like certain figures like within my school that like I thought I could get advice from, and like it just wasn't there. They were too conditioned to believe that, yeah, we weren't going to succeed. We used to have Pacific Island assemblies in high school, and they'd just sit there for 40 minutes and tell us how we were failing. And be like, so guys,
are you serious?
Yeah, and they'd just be like, look, guys.
Well, that's what I mean. It doesn't have to be white people failing. Being racist. Yeah. It's an assembly.
Yeah. It's the conditioning. And you're conditioning. And I'm like here at like 14, and this lady is just going off at how we're all failing and we all need to do better how it looks bad. No, brown lady.
Brown lady. Wow.
And she's saying it looks bad on us. Yeah, and she's saying
it looks bad on us. In an ashamed way.
Yeah. Like it looks bad on us. Down. Yeah, and then like, so, wow. And then. When I'm a naive, like, you know, 15-year-old, I remember one time in class, I was like, well, white people have no culture. And I was like, you know, very argumentative and all of those things. And they sent me to the office and the Pacific liaison wanted to suspend me.
What?
And I was like, you know, like, yeah, and I'm like a kid that obviously, you know, needs some help in trying to communicate my feelings. But no. This was like only a couple years ago. And they were like, what do you know about colonization? What do you? And I was like, What do you mean? It wasn't good. Like, you know, like I didn't have to know a lot to know that there's a pain that we feel as a people that I was trying to express. I don't think I did the best job of it, but I was like 15.
Yeah.
So there were no support systems. And so going up against that, like any time I would try to open my mouth after that, it was like, well, this is going to be an uphill battle.
Yeah.
I may as well just... Well,
are those experiences the fuel as to... Sorry, I'm asking the questions. That's just the interviewer in me.
That's fine.
But is those experiences the fuel as to why you are so successful now? Or that doesn't play in your mind at all?
I think we would have been successful without that.
Regardless.
Yeah, like... I think I definitely have a certain chip on my shoulder that I do things out of spite to prove people wrong. My school never believed, I went to a school up the road, but they never believed in our music. They said that rap wasn't a real genre, that I couldn't get it endorsed for NCAA.
How do you say rap is not a real genre in the 21st century?
I don't know.
Get this. I remember a time where there were actual radio stations and their slogan was "No rap, no crap."
I remember that.
Like, no shit.
Yeah.
And then Run-DMC came out and everyone went, what?
Yeah, like it was ridiculous, but those were some things that, you know, you just have to ignore and be like, well, I understand that there's a world out there that's way bigger than the school. I just need to find my people, you know?
Did your mental health, how was your mental health through this process?
I think mine was always steady because I had an insight, a maturity that other poly kids didn't have. I knew high school wasn't shit. Let's see what people are doing after high school. So I don't need to be popular right now. Like, let's just check on me in 3 years after high school and we'll see.
Yeah, wow.
You know, so I was never bothered about what was going on. I was always in my own head. And plus I had the internet, you know, like we're like the first generation to really have the internet. So I was always online, like, how can I learn things? And, you know, that kind of hunger to learn and get better at your craft, like, you can ignore a lot of things like that. But it wasn't the same for a lot of other people, like a lot of my mates.
Eating fried chicken in the shower. It's a generational serving.
I'm going to open some chicken. Because I'm hungry, and that is the point of the show as well. Oscar, you don't have to eat because you ate beforehand.
Yeah, sorry.
No apologies.
I'm wearing glasses because I have an eye injury.
So what have we got here?
I think you're just wearing glasses because you're cool. People probably don't know, but in Pacific culture, after a certain age, you just wear glasses.
It's great.
When you've
reached uncle status.
Uncle status, absolutely.
I think glasses are cool and expected, in fact.
Yeah, absolutely. They see you walk in wearing sunglasses on, they're like, he must be an uncle. This is karachi chickens, my choice.
I have a question, though. Oscar, you're from Tade.
Yes.
Me too.
So am I.
What?
Mm-hmm.
North?
Yep.
Well, that's all of us.
Wairini Avenue.
What?
I'm on Beach Road.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Cool. Yeah. You know why?
That's awesome.
One day, because my sister went to Rutherford, and so did my brother. But one day, my mom brought me back a piece of paper, because my favorite film at the time was Sione's 2.
I mean,
I was an extra in that movie, just beat the dog.
So was my brother. So it was. I used to watch it over that summer holiday, like every single day. Mm. And one day, my mom brought me a little piece of paper that said, "Hey Elijah, you're the man," or whatever. Mm. Love Oscar, and I was like, "Man, this is really cool. Like, this guy's the man. He's from Tat." So I say all this to say, I've always considered Oscar to be the person I have to beat in Tat.
Mm. That's cool.
That's cool.
Wow.
I tell you what, I also have a story about you, Oscar.
Yeah. Oh no.
I was a little kid and I used to see, I don't know why you were coming down my street, but I would sit.
Oh, Wyoming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would sit on my fence and I was like, who is this bald man that's driving this Bentley? I would sit on my fence. And all I remember thinking is, I don't know who he is, I don't know what he does, but I want to drive a Bentley.
Man, I remember Oscar picking me up for lunch one time when I was in Grey Lynn at my girlfriend's place, and you gave me a text like, yo, we're going to Ponsonby Food Court.
Yeah.
And you rolled, I'd never seen your car. And you rolled up in the Bentley, and I was like, yo, this man knows what to do.
Yeah.
It's funny because that became actually, since we've turned this into an episode of Oscar, this is your life. Do you feel the responsibility, Oscar?
I do.
You know, we've had a little bit of a conversation over the years about this stuff, but
unfortunately, we all have that responsibility.
Mm.
Unfortunately, we can't just be broadcasters, artists, rappers, musicians, actors, writers. We have to also be mentors. We have to also be community advocates. Mm-hmm. We have to also try and help out people's mental health.
Mm.
That's part of the burden that's somehow put on us.
Mm.
But I do feel that, and I used to really struggle with it. But I do feel it, and that's why sometimes I do assert myself in spaces that I think we belong and where we're not represented enough.
Mm.
Like driving Mercs.
Mm.
Or most restaurants. I don't feel like there's any place I don't belong. Because I felt like that as a kid. Mm-hmm. I sometimes thought, that's for flash people.
Yes.
That's for white people.
Yeah.
You know, so now as an adult, I really go out of my way to just treat the whole city as my village.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole world is my playground.
But for both of you, for Oscar and Emery, like, are there people when you were in church's position that were like able to give you support or like tell you, no, keep going that way?
At every step, there was always important people that were just there, like the teacher at Rutherford that applied for a cadetship for me, you know, the day they were due. He said, did you apply for that thing? I was like, nah. You know, which was my attitude back then, nah. He put it all together for me, applied it, drove me into town, handed it in by 5. Wow. I got the job. That I became a newspaper reporter and then, you know, went on and on and on. So at every step, there's been important people, like the teacher at Matapo that believed in me and stopped being mean. But it is like what Elijah says, it's you decide.
Mm-hmm.
You know? There are voices around you at all times, but you decide which of those, you know, means something at that moment, but don't hang on to that stuff, you know? You should be flowing all the time, deciding all the time, taking in all the input, you know, at all times, not trying to live up to an ideal that you heard 8 years ago. Or two, you know, it's you're always present, you're always constant, you're always alive. And people say stuff, but it's all part of the noise. Ultimately, it's you, you know, and actually it's inside. You know, you got to look within at those times.
But I guess I'll just on the back end of that, I, like Oscar, had teachers at Rutherford who really championed me to not just be another statistic and to fall into what I guess everyone else in my year was falling into. But nobody cheered me on as much as I cheered myself.
Yeah,
fair. Like, never. For me, I think I'm the greatest thing that ever walked.
Mm.
And I have to constantly remind myself, because it may not be true. I don't care if you don't believe it, but I'm going to believe it.
Yeah, yeah.
And for me, that is the biggest driving factor for me, is every morning I wake up and I tell myself I'm the sexiest person that ever lived.
Yeah.
And that's how I get my day started.
Yeah. Some Muhammad Ali stuff.
I have to, otherwise, like I also said, there's other people that just fall into the noise and you end up starting to believe what everyone else is saying.
Yeah, becomes internal.
Yeah, so I remind myself, and nobody's going to support me if I don't support myself. Like, nobody's going to care what I have to say if I don't care what I have to say. So that's my biggest thing, is I champion myself every day. To my detriment sometimes, the people in the office are sick of hearing it, but
yeah,
I don't care what they have to say.
Yeah, I think I learned that a bit later. I learned that once I got to high school. My best friend, he's this white guy. He's a genius, like, does a law and engineering degree. Like, he's always been the smartest guy in class. But me and him, like, we're pretty similar. But he would always, if a teacher was saying something that was wrong, he would just speak up and be like, yo, this is us. This is off. And I used to watch him and be like, yeah, he is, but why are we, like, I felt like, you know, at all times I have to be subservient.
Yeah.
And then I learned, like, well, you know, right is right, wrong is wrong. Like, you know, if you truly believe in something, you can speak up on it. But it wasn't until I saw white people doing it that I was like, oh, okay, I can do this.
What's that saying? Carry yourself with the confidence of a mediocre white man.
I was like, holy shit. Like, it was really new for me. And I think I gained a lot of confidence once I realized that, like, although the playing field may not seem equal, like, you can treat it as if it is and continue. Like, don't ever behave as if it's not. Because in reality, it is, despite what anybody else says. And, you know, we all start on different paths, but once you get to a certain age, like, and you understand.
With that attitude, I really see you, like, beating me in Tetanus.
I hope so. Respectfully, I hope so.
It's interesting as well, because you guys are like, have clearly had teachers who supported you at the same high school,
yeah,
but also teachers who have shat on you at the same high school.
Really
bad.
Really
bad.
It's polarizing. Like, you never know, as a school kid, like, what you're going to get in a day. Like,
it's terrible when you're a little kid and you're prone to some adult's prejudices, and that has some impact that extends beyond into your adult life. And if you can just look back and go, that was just some asshole being like an asshole. It didn't have to be an asshole in that moment, but that sort of shit just stays with you, and it shouldn't. And you've got to somehow find ways to let all that go, because it is, you know, the past.
Well, I had a teacher at that school call me a double statistic because I was Māori and Samoan, and that I would amount to nothing.
Wow.
Twice. Horrible. But see, that's an example of that, you know? It's like someone just being a dickhead. And because there's so much that comes with, like, we don't ask for this treatment that is different because we're brown. It just is.
Yeah.
And we have to somehow learn it. And we have to, you're being like that because of this. Oh, you're prejudiced, you're stupid. Oh, I see. And then before you even get to just being yourself. You've got to learn all that and then unlearn it in a way. Yeah.
Well, Oscar, you grew up in a real political time. Like, you know, it's dorm raids were rounding off, but the, you know, the...
I mean, even the music at the shocks. Time, you know, like.
But then you had, like, Bastion Point as well. You had, you know... nuclear testing, and Elijah, you've grown up in an incredibly politicized time
as well.
Like, I feel like we got a reprieve in the 90s.
I always tell anyone that was living in the 90s how well you had it off. Like, literally, the world was so chill. They were like, it was
Kevin Campbell happened.
And then towards, like, the back.
We were discussing this the other day. It was like, Kevin Campbell happened. That was like peak America. Kevin Campbell era.
Like,
he just wanted to talk
for a minute. Like, there was so much.
Fresh Prince, all that stuff.
And then, like, towards the late 90s, you had, like, all of those, there's, like, a specific genre of white comedy. Like, John Cusack, like, it was just so chill. Like, every time I look at that, I'm like, bruh, pre-9/11 was crazy.
We've talked a bit, well, a lot, about, like, community and upbringing. I want to talk a little bit about trauma, guys. I mentioned before that, you know, I've had two suicide attempts, survived those, by dumb luck. And the reason I speak about it publicly is because when I was growing up,
it's quite prevalent in Māori and Pacific youth in the hut and in Newtown back in Wally. Lost a couple of friends to it, almost lost a couple more. And I didn't realize that the ratio for Pacific Māori people was so high. I thought that was just normal. And then you talk to other communities, you share those stories, and you hear it's more. There was a study that came out this year, very recently, that showed that Pacific youth at the moment, 1 in 3 are having suicidal thoughts. So I just want to put that, I want to table that. And again, just ask all of you, you know, what does that say to you?
I think, yeah, that was like you were saying, you're almost conditioned to think that it's normal.
Mm-hmm.
Growing up, once I had little things, and I was every winter somebody would kill themselves or, you know, commit suicide, and I would be like, why is this is this just? I honestly, like, I was a child. I thought it was a seasonal thing. Like, I was like, what is going on? Yeah. I'm like, you know, 7 or 8. And yeah, like one of my brother's mates would pass away, or one of my sister's mates would pass away, or like, and this is, these are young people, high school age. And so yeah, that was always something that I thought was regular. And now I think about it now, I'm like, it's a.
Can I ask you a question? And feel free not to answer and tell me to shut up, but
no.
You said that you attempted suicide twice. Can I ask what's going through your head at that point of time?
You can, yeah, that's fine. I've talked about it a lot and had enough time. One's only a few years ago. They were both different. Yeah. One was pain and the other was burnout. So the first time involved cutting, and it was feeling like the best option, like you were a burden, that you were, I was causing pain by my existence. And so by ending my existence, I would make people happier. Even after the grief, once the grief was gone, their lives would be improved by the absence of me. The second one was a complete burnout, where I walked in front of a bus in London on the way back to New Zealand, which made my flight very interesting. And that was my brain just so exhausted and so numb, and knowing there was so much work coming and going, there was just a tap out. It was like, all right, world, fair enough. You won. I thought I could fight against the door and punch my way out of it, and I couldn't. And I think realizing that both of them were different, it was actually very important for me, because it's something I keep an eye on now, because you know that it's not just cutting, it's not just walking, it's the ending and what triggers that. And it made me, the second one especially, made me very conscious of going, oh shit, I thought I was over this.
Yeah.
You know, because it had been 10 years since the last one. And now I'm much more respectful of my mental health and red flags and having boundaries in them.
Wow. Are these premeditated, or is it sort of off the cuff, sort of emotions?
Off the cuff, in the moment. I have friends who have had very premeditated, and that's... in some ways, I think even more painful. I don't want to negate anyone's experience, but as a friend, seeing someone do a premeditated one and the thought and the planning, and I can relate to that again. But mine were very in the moments. The first one was after a very heavy drug and alcohol fueled bender in isolation, so it was an almost, in my mind, natural conclusion to something I was driving myself towards.
It's just, I mean, like you were saying, it's just so common, and it's always has been. And we did always just, I think, it was normal. But it's so common. We all have, we all know people. We all, I'm sure each one of us is touched by an experience of that. And I'm just wandering off in my head, just thinking about the families of my... you know, my loved ones have lost people that way, and just the how hard it is, you know, even now. So all I can think of is how, you know, it doesn't end the pain, it transfers it.
With what do you, each of you do with that kind of trauma when you're processing it?
Talk.
Yeah.
I talk to my parents a lot. Because I feel like they were in my shoes, like, you know. So I have the privilege, you know, to be able to talk to my parents regularly. Mm. I think that's an important thing. One thing that I definitely took for granted in the past, especially when you're a teenager and you're, like, searching for self.
Mm.
But, yeah, being able to talk to somebody you trust, you know, a family member, somebody who feels on the level, that means a lot to me.
Mm.
I get wasted sometimes.
Yeah.
That helps.
Yeah.
But then that brings its own problems. And then that's not really sustainable.
Yeah.
So I'm looking for another way to cope. I'm still figuring that out.
Yeah. I can't get wasted anymore because it turned out also I'm an alcoholic. But I computer game. Mm. In terms of what you're saying, Oscar, of like just getting your brain out.
It's not the way, and I'm not condoning that at all. You know,
I'm not sure computer games is the way either. I don't
just
think
being
I
honest in terms of addressing what you're you know, raising.
What is the right way? Is there a right way?
I don't know.
Because I feel I've become so good at suppressing. I grew up in a family where we all are very opinionated people, and we talk about everything, but nothing at all. Mm. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like we speak about very base level emotions and never sort of go any deeper than that. And I've learnt to sort of detach or disassociate any emotional feeling to anything, to the point where I know it's got one day just going to regurgitate out my ass and I'm going to be sitting in the shower in a puddle of my own piss like, oh, how did I get here? When I know how I got here.
I recommend having chicken in that moment.
Because you know, it's suppressing it all.
Yeah. I know what you mean. Like, I've had conversations with my family because I am the most sensitive child.
Mm.
So my emotional intelligence has always been, you know, different to my other siblings. Some are a bit more staunch, some are a bit more stubborn.
Mm.
But I've had those moments of when it just all boils up.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough. Like, a lot of, I think it's hard to understand because you want, like for me, I've always been like a peacemaker. I just want peace.
Mm.
But it's hard to, I get so, not upset, but just, I feel the type of way when you see things that other people don't see.
Mm.
And you feel things that other people haven't come to that conclusion yet.
Mm.
And that can be a very hard thing because at the end of the day, even when you let all of these emotions out, if you're the only one that understands it, you're still alone.
Yeah.
Mm.
And that's a challenge that a lot of us face. You know, it's understanding, even when you understand the emotions, doesn't mean it's fixed. Just because you can now put words to it, sometimes it's not that simple. And I think I've learned that recently, like very recently.
Sometimes I reckon language is a problem because we're having these emotions and these feelings and then we put words to it and those words mean certain things.
Mm.
Sometimes I think we let the words sink in where we could just let the emotion pass or just be with it and go, oh, I'm feeling like this. But in that moment, then we add sentences and we tell ourselves things. Mm. And then those words, they're like spells.
Mm.
Words are like spells, so you've really got to be careful which ones you listen to.
Because
you're talking to yourself all the time.
Yeah.
So I think maybe as part of the figuring it out, I reckon it's being kind to yourself in terms of what you say. And also when people say things, just pretend the words don't mean anything. Just look at how they, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Because the words are always distractions to what's really going on inside your head, right? Mm. Sometimes I think we take that too much on board, language.
Mm.
Especially because as Pacific people, we have thousands of years of certain worldviews and values that are part of our DNA.
Mm.
And we are minorities in a place where that are ruled by a different set of values and expectations. And so sometimes we, because our second language is English, which is we're taking those things on. When, you know, like, for example, the whole thing, are you left wing or right wing? Well, I don't know. I think poor people should get fed.
Yeah.
I think rich people should pay their taxes. I don't know whether that makes me ask, what does that even matter?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think sometimes people can paint themselves into terrible traps with the combinations of words that they let
100%
build in defences.
Absolutely.
Even the, a sentence like, is it fixed or not? What does that mean? How can something be fixed? You know what I mean? It's just in your head. You're you know, is that all right now? Well, it feels the same way whether it is or not. So sometimes it's kind of freeing yourself from these word traps in the media, in conversations from people. It's actually just kind of looking at languages, just gobbledygook. You know, it's like, you know, I mean, it's, I once heard a term for language, it's just fancy breathing. You know?
That's good, man.
I mean, as when we were all in the caves, humans had to learn a way to communicate and tell us where the berries were, where the, you know? But somehow, because we've got so much leisure time, we let ourselves be ruled by words and concepts and ideals and thoughts, like, what is a Samoan? What makes you a proper Pacific person? What is a New Zealander? What does that even mean? You know? And that's what I mean by culture being thought traps that we just agree to somehow try and live up to. It's all an agreement.
I think a lot of the times we want to live up to it, though, so we can be accepted.
What does that even mean?
I don't know. I can tell you for a fact I've always wanted to be accepted by...
But who says you're not?
I don't know. But something in my mind has always been like, oh... If I do X, Y, Z, then I'll be a real
culture and society puts on all of us. You leave kindy, oh cool, you can start school.
Or even like, are you half Samoan or quarter?
But can you speak some? What does that mean?
I am. You just, you know.
It just, and actually, it's no one else's business. It's, you know.
Right. But these, like you say, they're weird.
These weird games that we all agree to mean something. You're something if you can do this.
Eating fried chicken in the shower. Can't fit your mates in the shower? Try FaceTime. Or maybe just phone.
How are each of you with speaking up on this conversation, how are each of you with loneliness?
I love it.
Me too.
Yeah?
Me too.
Yes, to be honest.
Less stress being by yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is my activity for the day. I can't do more than one a day.
Yeah.
This is quite a output. The glasses are helping. But this is quite a thing. This will leave me quite tired. And I'll go, wow, that was cool, rewarding, and really awesome sharing that energy and really cool meeting those peeps. But that'll be it for the day. My mental health.
I wouldn't say I'm like a recluse or anything, but like, I just prefer small company to no company. You know, it's the quality. It's quality over quantity. So I only have like three friends. To be honest, I only have like three friends that I really go to outside of like my music. And I have friends for, you know, different areas of my life, but it's very minimal.
Because you can't hang out with everyone at once anyway.
Exactly.
You've got to have a few.
I can only be present for so much.
Shakespeare says, love all, trust a few, do harm to none.
Mm-hmm.
He was a genius.
I think that's right. I try to live my life like that. But on the topic of loneliness, like, I've always prefer to be alone because I think my thoughts are the best. Like, you know, like, I've been able to use the cultural pride and confidence that, you know, I see in my family members to kind of ignite something in me, like, that that doesn't mind what other people think. Like, let them believe that. But I know that no matter, and this is another thing that I had to learn, no matter what anybody has to say to you, it's at some point in their life, in their day, they have to take a shower, look in the mirror and think, why did I say that to them? You know, like,
if somebody's a dick to you on the road, if you don't react, they have to go home and think about that. Like, fuck, why did I just say that to him? Like, I could have just shut my mouth. And that's not my problem. That's their problem. Yeah. Like, I'm not going home and rethinking about all of these things. Mm. Like, or whether someone berated me. I'd rather think about, well, I wonder how that's going to make you feel whenever you feel it. Sometimes it takes longer, but I guarantee you it's like going to happen. So when you understand that, you become a lot better with yourself.
Mm. Yeah. So yeah, loneliness is awesome. Yeah. Don't be scared of it.
It's definitely something that you can use to your to, you know, make you
You've
more.
You've got to be your own best company.
Uh-huh. Amen.
Yeah.
Because you're by with yourself most of the all the time.
Yeah.
So you gotta have to really enjoy
yourself. We're never told that though.
Yeah.
We're taught pack mentality.
Mm-hmm.
Like, especially out west and out south, it's pack mentality. And I meet people, some of my friends, who, you know, I try to encourage them to let go of that. Like, think for yourself. What do you want to do? Like, the boys aren't coming with you now. Like, if you want to go somewhere, like, you do it because you want to do it. But don't, like, try to drag everyone along. Like, because it's not always going to be like that. Life's not always going to be like that. So you have to be very sure of yourself and what you want to do.
Yeah.
I learned to like loneliness.
Yeah.
I don't think I liked it at first. I grew up, my older siblings are 10 and 11 years older than me. So they were out of the house while I was a kid. And I had to find ways to entertain myself.
Yeah.
So now that I'm an adult, I find myself still doing those same things that I was doing as a kid to entertain myself. And it just so happens to be, I'm by myself.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's the reason why I like being alone.
I've the eldest by 7 years on my siblings, so I had that period of just being by myself, and it's the same thing. Yeah, I wonder if that's how we all end up in the arts as well, to a degree. Is just you spend enough time in your head and you end up getting a good imagination.
Well,
and
it's great
stuff.
Therapy, isn't it, for kind of figuring all that stuff in your head out. That's why it's best out than in.
Get it out somehow.
Yeah.
Guys, final question, and thank you so much for coming down today and sharing food and chat and time. I ask this of everyone who is a guest in here, because it's my safe space. Is there anything that you would like to share in the shower before we go?
Nah. Only just that I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know anything.
Mm. Yeah.
And I don't, you know, even of all the flash, I might have slung a few flash sentences together, but I don't know. I'm still figuring it out. I think that's all right.
Yeah.
This is only.
So there's no answers.
Right. These are only four. This is four people's perspectives.
Even though I think there's power in that sentence from a Pacific Island guy in his 50s to be able to say, who's had a. Look, man, let's just give you some flowers. You've had a great career. You are a legend in the arts. And for you to be able to stay there and go, look, man, I still don't know. I'm still figuring out. I think if I'm 20 and I'm struggling to figure stuff out, then that's cool to hear. You know, that it's a journey. There isn't a correct
path. It's okay
path.
Not to know.
One thing I would say, and I say it all the time, I think I'll be saying it when I'm an old man as well. It's like you just have to stay in your own lane. Like, people move at different paces.
Yeah.
So if you see somebody who's doing something really cool over in this lane, the generation that I'm in now, they tend to want to indicate, you know?
Yeah.
But they're in the fast lane, so what happens when you indicate into a lane that's not meant for you?
Yeah.
You just crash. So know where you're going, or at least, like, you know that you're on your road. You don't have to know where it's going all the time. Sometimes it helps to have goals and things, but it's not necessary. I would just say, stay in your lane and you at least won't crash from anybody else's shit.
Mm. The one thing I think I want to say, something that my nana always told me, was out of all the stars in the sky, all the sperms or however you want to look, like, you were the one that came here. So therefore you have a purpose. There is a reason you are here, whatever that reason may be. But there's a reason you're here.
Well, thanks a lot. Thanks a lot, guys. In the church, Oscar, it's been really great convo, and I'm glad we could have it.
Thank you.
Thank you, James.
Yep. Eating Fried Chicken in the Shower is produced for RNZ by Charlie Bleakley of Fruit and Nut Productions. The engineer is Ronnie Powick. The executive producers are Justin Gregory and Tim Watkin.
You can find this podcast however you just found this podcast. Or if you're listening on the radio, go to RNZ's podcast page and look for The Chicken. If you're rating podcasts and you want to rate ours, give us 5 stars. Remember, more stars, more chicken. If you want to share your comfort food and your mental health safe space with me, then you can tweet me on @JamesNorkusic. If you're experiencing mental health issues and you're in New Zealand, you can text 1737. Or go to the RNZ Fried Chicken page and we'll have a list of different mental health practitioners that might be able to assist you. If because of the pandemic you're experiencing COVID-related mental health issues, you can go to www.health.govt.nz. Look for the COVID page and you'll be able to find mental health resources there. Stay safe. Whakatau lava. Matua.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.